Do you like hot sauce? Then you'll love Great White Hot Sauce. It's a small batch, handmade hot sauce, made especially for you. So if you want some badass hot sauce, go to www.trygreatwhite.com. Well, here we are, episode 83. And on this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about holiday music. Not Christmas music, holiday music. Did you know there's a difference? Well, now you know. We're also going to talk about some music news. Maybe I'll have a little trivia. I don't know. We'll see. Kind of go on my whim. See how the flow of the show goes. Because that's how I roll, baby. So sit back, relax, enjoy the podcast.
The KOFB studio presents Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast hosted by Scott McLean with his co-host Jack Calabrese. Now, let's talk music. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Amanda, for that wonderful introduction as usual. Amanda and I just got done watching, prior to this podcast live stream, I had her watch White Christmas for the first time. Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye and Vera Miles and Clooney. Rosemary Clooney. And it's a good movie. Good Christmas movie. It's a Christmas movie at the beginning. In the middle, it's a big story build-up. And at the end, it's a Christmas story again. I'm sure you've seen it. If you haven't, it's a good movie. It's when movies were entertaining. It's when movies were made to make you happy. No messages. No preaching. No. It's a musical. It's fun. So anyways, welcome to the podcast. You know the name, I'm not going to say it. Streaming live right now over Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, DLive, and something else. I don't know. But it's really about the podcast listeners. The true and loyal podcast listeners. Speaking of true and loyal, here's my buddy Jack Calabrese.
Hey! White Christmas, huh?
Yeah, buddy. It's a classic.
It's a classic. Am I Bing or am I Danny?
Oh, yeah, Danny. You're definitely Danny.
Come on.
Although,
now.
You know, Vera Miles was a hottie. She was a tiny little thing, right? She's a beautiful, beautiful girl. Rosemary Clooney, kind of manly looking. I'm just saying.
Looks a little like her nephew, Georgie Boy.
Yeah. She wasn't really. Like, beautiful. She has a great voice, and, you know, she had an okay body, but that face is kind of mannish.
I love the fact that you and I make comments on the aesthetics and what other people look like because of our own exterior beautiful.
Hey, I'm a goddamn good looking man. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh, you're very
in my Wu-Tang clan. Christmas shirt. Greatest Christmas shirt ever. I was telling Jack before we went on, last time I put this shirt on, I was 50 pounds heavier and it was tight. It was tight. Well, okay, maybe last Christmas I was, I don't know, maybe 40 pounds and I put on 10 pounds over the, it was tight no matter what,
Nah, Jack, you're doing good, man. You look good.
I'm trying. You know, I'm going to be, I'm going to be 59 on Sunday. So I got to,
What are you doing for your birthday? Anything special?
Dr. Vera is taking me to this, like, the ultimate brunch at this hotel in West Palm Beach. I forget the name of it, but it's like, I don't know. It's not cheap. And all the lobster tail you can eat, all the king crab you can eat, all the, it is like an ultimate buffet, but it's amongst, like, you know, you got to dress nice. You got to go there looking nice, right?
No Wu-Tang shirt.
No, not for this one. No, Dr. Vera would not allow that.
The all you can eat. How much damage can you do? How many crab legs? How many lobster tails?
Dude, lobster tails? I'll put away a minimum 10 lobster tails. Minimum.
10?
10. Oh, yeah. Buddy, I ate a 52-ounce porterhouse. I can eat 10 lobster tails. I could do that.
The good doctor just must look at you gnawing on those lobster tails saying, there's the man I married. I need to have him right now.
And as you know, because I'm proud of it, the fact that she knows that my blood work is perfect and she has no worries other than me choking from being a disgusting pig and not breathing and not chewing, just swallowing. That's the only hazard is a choking hazard.
God.
So yeah, so we're doing that.
The poor people at the brunch, they're like, "Oh my God, here he comes again."
So you know, it's in a very nice hotel. It's one of the higher end hotels in West Palm Beach by the water. And the last time we were there, we go. It's not a place you go all the time. You know, we went probably a couple times a year. We go, and the last time we went, everybody's there. Everyone's dressed nice. Family's coming in. Everyone's like, and you see this fucking slob come in with a basketball jersey and fucking shorts, you know, like gym shorts. And, you know, I don't care if the dude's got $20 million in the bank. That's some fucking respect. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ. Like he's like one of those guys. Like I stay here so I can dress however I want. I don't care. Nah. In a place like that, you know, you should kind of,
You want people to be dressed appropriately, the proper attire.
Make an effort
while you're practicing for your very last meal, your death row meal.
Well, I eat 10 lobster tails, but I look good doing it. At least I'm dressed nice. Now I might come out with some stains on that shirt, on that Brooks Brothers shirt. But you know, hey, listen, it's worth it. It's worth it.
Getting back to the movies, White Christmas, is that the go-to holiday movie for you?
No, you know what has become the go-to holiday movie for me? It's FX, the channel FX.
Yeah.
The FX, A Christmas Carol.
Who's in that one?
It's over two nights. I think it's a BBC production. I'm not sure if there's any, like, you know, American stars in there, but it is a dark version of A Christmas Carol, but it's done. It was done over two nights. It was like a big thing. It was really fucking good. It's really good.
In the Calabrese household, there's that the musical version of A Christmas Carol that was late 60s with Albert Finney.
Albert Finney. Yep.
Called Scrooge.
Scrooge, yeah.
That we watch each and every year.
Yeah, yeah. Scrooge. Where do you rank George C. Scott in the Scrooges of history? You know the version, funny. Right? You know the version of George C. Scott.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. It was okay.
Yeah, he's a different kind of, he was a different kind of actor.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their own little, you know, their own little spin on it. I know the version that you're talking about, and I can't remember who the actors were in it, but it's a very, very serious take on it. And it is. It's a a darker and definitely more dreary, as is the original story.
The original, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. It's not meant to be a lighthearted, you know, comedy. It's a dark story.
The story is, so isn't that how they go, how the song says, there'll be scary ghost stories and everything's, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Most wonderful time of the year. Because they used to tell ghost stories at Christmas. That was like a thing. A lot of people don't know, like, you hear that song, you're like, what do they mean, scary ghost? Christmas Carol is a ghost story. It's literally a ghost story. You know, it's kind of a horror show. Horror story. And that's what they used to do at Christmas. And then, let's see, Madison Avenue came along and commercialized it and made it a thing that they start selling Christmas stuff right after Halloween.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, you know, when you kind of transition out of, you know, being a little kid and really hoping for Santa to bring you toys. But I know in my household, we quickly graduated to music. You know, all of a sudden Santa wasn't bringing sleds and trains and G.I. Joes. It was all albums. It was Kiss Alive 2 It was Queen and
Earth,
Billy
Wind
Joel
and Fire and
Earth, Wind and Fire. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. David Bowie albums. It, like
Santa had a record pressing plant up in the North Pole.
We used to give each other albums, and I remember one Christmas, I guess there was no communication because I ended up with two copies of Queen, Day at the Races. I don't know how I ended up. No. It was not Day at the Races. What's the one with the robot?
News of the World.
News of the World. Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah. Yep. I got it too. I got two
of them. I was like, what am I going to do with two of them?
And I do have to admit, being the impatient boy that I was, I very, very, very carefully undid some of the wrapping paper just to see what it was. Maybe to prevent myself from going out and buying that exact same album. But there were two under the tree: Kiss Alive 2 and News of the World.
Yeah. We used to do it, and then
one of those two albums have held up very well over the years. The other one, not as
so
much.
Yeah.
Still good. Still some good stuff on there.
The funny thing is, our albums used to go into the same collection, like the household collection, you know? What would happen is, so my brother Mark and I, rest in peace, we'd play cards. Like, we'd be playing poker. I'm fucking 11 and he's 13, or he's 12 and I'm fucking 10, right? A 9. And we're playing poker, and we'd be playing for like nickels, dimes, and quarters in the house. And all of a sudden, like, you have no money. And it's like, I'm putting my Earth, Wind, and Fire album on the table. Like, degenerates at 9 and 12. We're gambling degenerates. I bet. And then he'd win. And then he's like, it's mine. Although I can listen to it. The fact that he fucking had my album, you know,
it's like, all a mind game.
It was all in the, it was like, fuck, it's
all a mind game.
Yeah. Again, but then at the end of the game, it would all go right back into the giant stack of whatever 500 albums we had, 300 at the time.
Yeah. But he had the right to say, Hey, hold the album from the edges. Be careful with that. It's not yours anymore.
Yeah. So you go and you sabotage it just to find out that he gives it back to you eventually. It's scratched.
Yeah, maybe for your birthday.
Yeah.
Rewrap.
I won it back in a card game. I believe I did win it back in another card game. So holiday music, right? People think that it's all in one general term, right? It's technically you have Hollywood holiday music and there's Christmas music. Right. Radio stations will call it holiday music because they play both. But holiday songs were written for the holidays specifically. It's just in general, the holidays. Like Jingle Bells, as you know, was originally a Thanksgiving song, right? Just nothing sticks with Thanksgiving, though. Nothing sticks. Nothing. You can have a song with the word Thanksgiving in it, as we found out last Thanksgiving on our Thanksgiving party. Nothing sticks.
Nope. So, Alice's Restaurant. That's it, man.
That's the 22-minute version.
That's it, man.
Whole Sideman album. That's it. You can eat a turkey dinner, and that song will still be playing.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be funny? Everyone's sitting around the table, right? And no one's talking, but everyone's eating and listening to Arlo Guthrie sing.
Arlo Guthrie sing Alice's complain about the Vietnam War and how he tried to dodge the draft.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got the turkey and you're like, hold on, my favorite part coming up. Right. But nothing sticks. The Jingle Bells got shifted to Christmas.
Mother right? Stabbers. Father Rapers.
Yeah. So you have like songs like Happy Holidays and, with a Jingle Bell Rock. I mean, like. And then you have songs like White Christmas. Now, let me ask you this. Is Silent Night a Christmas song?
I've always thought of it as a Christmas song just because I've always interpreted it as making reference to, you know, Jesus being born and, you know, the right. manger and all that. I don't know if that's technically true or not. But you know what, I understand the differentiation that you're highlighting, but I've never thought of it that right. way. I mean, I just always thought of it as, you know, certainly when I was a kid, it's Christmas music.
Right. Dude, I definitely never thought of it any other way. This is like a recent thought, as recent as this week. I'm like, this is really not a Christmas song. It's played at Christmas. Doesn't mention Christmas. It's more of a religious song, right? But it's played at Christmas because Santa was born on Christmas, right? So I mean, remember, Santa died for your sins. Don't forget. This time of year, you need to remember that.
Don't be bad. Don't be bad, Mountain Sam. Hey, Santa, he brought me news. He brought me news of the world.
Hey. Santa died for somebody's sins, but not mine.
Easy there.
Greatest opening line of a song ever. Mm. Greatest. Jesus.
Going to see her in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and she's going to see you on this side of the room and on that side of the room.
Oh, please. Come on now.
She's like one of them fucking lizards.
Oh, man.
She got Marty Feldman eyes.
So getting back to your holiday thing. So do you think that people that have practiced other faiths, that do you think they're big Jingle Bell fans?
Jingle Bells, sure. Change the background.
I don't know. It may be associated a little bit too closely with the Christmas holiday.
Oh, I don't know. Again, like I never really looked deep into this until.
You're a retired guy now. This is what I want you to do over the next couple of days. I want you to tool around Florida, and I want you to find 24 people of different faiths, and I want you to ask them, get your list of holiday music, not Christmas music, but holiday music. And just ask them, like, hey, when do you start firing these types of tunes up?
Well, when do you start firing them up?
Right after Thanksgiving, I think is
yeah.
when I start. That's when the season officially starts for me. I know in the stores, you know, you can get Christmas stuff right after July 4th. But
Labor Day.
Yeah. You know what? I like to savor the holidays and I like them in their appropriate places, you know? So, you know, I don't listen to the, you know, the Christmas and holiday songs anytime before the Thanksgiving holiday is over.
Right.
And I certainly don't go beyond maybe the day after Christmas. You know, right. for me, and I don't know if this is a byproduct of getting older, but I don't go out of my way to listen to a lot of like holiday and Christmas songs. The most I hear of that is when the lovely Deborah and I put up the tree, we have our standards that we listen to.
So I want to get to that next week. Next, I want to talk about your Christmas playlist. So let's kind of move that to, because that's the week of Christmas. I just wanted to kind of talk holiday songs, like just the difference. Like, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I do want you to save that for next week, because I want your Christmas playlist, Mike, and let's see how many match up. I'm sure there's quite a few that match up as far as Christmas songs. Christmas playlist. Okay. And some of them have holiday music in them, right? Like, have you, okay, so a lot of artists do holiday albums, right? Christmas albums are holiday albums with Christmas songs on them.
Yes.
I recently listened to Joss Stone do Let It Snow. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's a whole different fucking person.
Josh Stone is an amazing.
It's a whole different voice.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman. But, you know, it's funny. You're right. I mean, anybody that's in the music business at some point in their career, they are almost obligated to do some type of, you know, Christmas / holiday album. Even Bob Dylan did one.
Let it snow.
And you know what? Most of them, you know, it's interesting. Josh Groban, Elton John, George Michael, you know, Mariah Carey, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. You know, everybody's done at least, you know, one holiday or Christmas song. Most of them are not very good.
Correct.
Correct. Every now and again, you find a real gem.
So I sent you a text recently, and I want to make sure I get this. We text all the time, but we were talking about what we wanted to talk about, right? And I said, you know, tomorrow night we'll do holiday songs, not Christmas songs, but music notes. And you said holiday songs, ? And I said, Jingle Bells is a holiday song. White Christmas is a Christmas song. A lot of people don't know the difference. So you were like, okay, you know. And then I said, version.
No. I didn't say okay.
I'm playing nice.
I said, thanks. Thanks for that.
I'm trying to make you look good. Instead, you know, the fucking
reality
asshole.
Of it is, like, whoa. Just
I'm trying
hold on.
To make you look good. I could have said, and you sarcastically came back like a fucking asshole. Thanks for that. But I didn't do that, did I? Because this is a holiday show.
No.
I'm being nice.
I'm more than comfortable saying thanks for that. Because the reality of it is holiday song, Christmas song, most people don't give a shit.
No, they don't. But I thought it's an observation. It's an interesting observation. A lot of people go, huh, I never thought of that. They move on. It's not thought-provoking or anything. But, you know, you start listening to songs after you hear that, and you're like, that's a holiday song. Like, it's once you hear that, you start changing, like, well, that's a Christmas song. That's a holiday song. So, I heard the worst version of Silent Night I've ever heard in my life. Fucking worst version of Silent Night by Shaggy. Mr. Lover.
Right? What do you expect?
Come on, what the fuck? Expect? I know. It was so fucking bad. Like, Shaggy has no right, has fucking zero right. I don't care. The First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, whatever fucking amendment. Shaggy has no right singing Silent Night. It's horrible. It's fucking horrible. And the fact that they played it on the radio. On Sirius, because Sirius XM has three Christmas channels, right?
They have three
holiday music. That's all I listen to. Dude, from the day after Thanksgiving to the day after Christmas, my radio station never changes. Only between those three.
Just
Christmas music. Just Christmas music.
Just Christmas music, not holiday
in
music.
In my car. I mean, I'm sorry. Just like everything. I have the holiday channels, they call them.
So you don't get an auditory craving to put on Led Zeppelin or no. You know, U2 or your beloved Earth, Wind and Fire. It's from Thanksgiving to does it end Christmas Day?
The day after Christmas when all, I get in the all car.
You,
I'll
change all it. You listen to. All you listen to.
Those three channels. And my playlist. Like I have we'll talk about next week. I have my playlist, but it's all Christmas and holiday music. So we'll just say it's all holiday music, right?
I think that's equally wonderful and a little fucked up. But, but you know, I do realize
whoa,
that
whoa,
I'm...
Wait,
let me finish. I do realize that there is a big, giant, little kid... In you. I mean, come on, you're a guy that eats hot dogs with just ketchup on it. And what have I said? You know, we've had that long-standing debate, like, do you put ketchup on a hot dog? And my theory is always like, I think ketchup on a hot dog is fine as long as it's got other stuff on it. Ketchup alone on a hot dog? It's a little fucked up. And now I can actually visualize you in my head watching you eat a hot dog with just ketchup on, listening to Jingle Bells for the 57th time in like 3 weeks.
And I wash it down with eggnog. Hey, we have Bob Doucette said, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Bob. Aww. Bill Aldrich is a good man. Good man. An Air Force veteran like myself. Good man.
Wait a minute. Bob Doucette, only way to eat a hot dog is just ketchup.
That's my man right there.
That's crazy.
Name. It's just crazy. Hold on. I got to let somebody through the gate. Jesus. No, it's not crazy. See, I'm not alone. The unofficial mayor of Winter, Bob Gillis's Adam Sandler songs, he eats hot dogs with just ketchup also.
Who, Bob Gillis or Adam Sandler?
I bet he does. Bob Gillis and Adam Sandler.
Come on, Bob Gillis eating a hot dog with just ketchup. That's not very surprising.
That's fancy.
I made Bob Gillis eat one piece of eggplant parmesan. You would have thought that I was feeding him lamb brains.
I was there. He was horrified. He wanted to slit his wrist with the steak knife. We had to take the steak knife out of his hand. He's like, what did I just eat? He made the 5-year-old like that, and the tongue came out. Bah. He wants to kill us right now. it's the power of the live stream, Bob. We have the power.
Look, getting back to you, listening. Look, maybe I'm a little grinchy, maybe I'm a little scroogey, but I can't listen to just holiday music for a fucking month.
I do. And you know what? I also remember now, I'm like Mr. Christmas. I have 110 Santa statues that go up all around my house. I have stuffed animal, like stuffed Christmas bears and stuff that all go like, I fucking love Christmas.
I love that you love Christmas. That's wonderful.
I got that from my father, the old Viking. He gave me the Christmas spirit.
How long have you and the good doctor been together?
10 years.
So after 10 years, and I know that you guys have worked your butts off, and she continues to work her butt off, and that you've put yourself in the enviable position, deservedly so. That look, if you want something, you go out and get it. Does that make it more difficult for you guys around the holidays to buy for each other?
That's a good question. Well. So I'm not going to say no because in a way it does, but I'm at the point in my life where literally I don't really want anything. Okay. She wants to know if I want another, like a better lens for my live stream camera, like stuff like that. I'm like, no, baby, I really am at the point where I am content with just being happy at Christmas. And there is not much that I need, right? Now, then we start getting into the philosophical conversation of what do you really need, right? But we're not going to get into all that, but.
The lovely Deborah and I are in the same situation where, like, and I have to tell you, this is the first year in many years where I'm really struggling, you know, to think of something to get her, that, you know, she may appreciate. And I'm wondering if you get the same rap that I get, like my kids and my wife, they're like, you're impossible to buy for. And I'm like, how can you say that? I paint, I draw, I play guitar. I like to read. I have, you know, I love my albums. And they were like, yeah, but you have all the albums that you want. Like I wouldn't even, they wouldn't even know where to start.
Right.
You know, right. So.
I always like handbags.
You like wearing handbags?
No, but I do admire women's handbags. Like I see a nice handbag, I'm like, that's a nice handbag. Like I know just something. It's like, to me, they're like cameras, just like anything else. I look at a nice handbag, that's like a piece of art. It was made, handmade, put together very well. I just look at it as, you know, they're just aesthetically nice. So I get my wife nice handbag. I bought her one last month that I was going to save for Christmas. And, well, I just decided to just give it to her because I said, you know, I'm going to give it to you and I'll get you something else for Christmas, but I think you deserve it now because she does work hard. And so now she's like, well, you got me my gift. Like, I don't spend another X amount on that, you know? So kind of like, and I don't want to just not give her something, you know?
Well, you know what? I'm typically pretty good throughout the year that I'm always listening for those little clues and cues from her. If I see her make a comment or make note about, geez, I really like that, or I would really love to have that. But this year, I'm struggling, brother.
I got her for her birthday, and I know we're getting way off topic, but it's gifts. For her birthday, I got her a alligator skin nurse's bag, like a traveling nurse.
Almost like the old fashioned doctor's bags.
Yeah. Except this was from a nurse, that she, and let me see, she retired in 1969. She used that bag for like 50 years, right? 40 or 50 years. I got the whole background on it. She's still alive in Pennsylvania. But the thing is, she retired in 69. That's when my wife was born. So kind of like this bag was destined to get to her, you know? So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. So I can get her things like that. You know, Mark Smith says books. Look at that. See now this isn't a music podcast evidently tonight, but that's okay. Who gives a shit? It's the holidays. Books. People don't really give books as gifts anymore because everything is online.
Well, a lot of people don't don't really read.
Well, they do, but they don't read, like, you don't see. I haven't taken the train in a while, but I know for a fact that if I got on one, you're not going to see. Like, I used to be reading the Stephen King book on the subway, or Spencer for Hire book, or, you know, whatever, a Michener book, whatever I was reading going back and forth to work in Boston. And you don't see that anymore. Everything is on their phone. People read books on their phone now.
Books, you know? I agree with Mark. Mark, I think that books are a great gift, but people read less now, and a lot of people read online, whether it's their iPad or Kindle. I still like holding a book.
A physical book, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I could read a book online. I tried, and it just doesn't feel right. But we're an older generation. We're a different generation. There's a generation of kids now that's all they do.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. And books aren't, they're not as expensive. They can be, but they're not really. Speaking of expensive, you know, Janet Jackson's going on tour, right?
I heard that.
So, checked out. She's playing with the Hard Rock. in Hollywood, right down the road.
Is this another Ticketmaster segment?
This isn't. No, but I do have another thing on Ticketmaster. But this is a, and it seems I see a trend between Bruce Springsteen. Who else did we talk about? Metallica. There was somebody else we talked about. Now I see
the whole Taylor Swift debacle.
Well, that was a debacle, and it's still a debacle, actually. But that's a whole different thing. Janet Jackson's ticket prices start pretty much at $350 up to $2,300 for a ticket, right?
And you said that Hard Rock facility. How big is it?
5,000 people.
So it's a smaller venue.
Yeah, I bet you could look at the prices anywhere. Go on Ticketmaster, pick a venue, and look at the prices.
Yeah, you're probably right.
They set the price. It doesn't matter where they are, right? And then I find out that Anita Baker's coming back out on tour. I saw her at the Garden with Luther. It's a great double bill. And I looked at, she's coming to the Hard Rock. And I looked at her ticket prices, $350 to $1,200. Nah. So this is what you have now. The fucking, the bar has been raised and they're all going after it. All these oldies acts, as I'll call them, are going for that money grab.
Yeah, you want to hear something refreshing?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the band Death Cab for Cutie?
Yeah, Death Cab for Cutie, yeah.
Yeah, great, great band. So they, believe it or not, Death Cab for Cutie, you know, I think a lot of us think of them as being a newer band. They're actually going out on tour celebrating their 20th.
I was going to say, anniversary. Yeah.
They
came out in the early 2000s, yeah.
They're coming to Maine, bought four tickets, $62 a piece.
Look at that.
$62.
Right.
It can be done, people. It can be done.
Well, like I said, Gorillaz wasn't fucking $350. And they have a big following, right? Korn, they're never over. Like, you know, if I want to get a good seat, it's maybe 120, you know? But I've paid 80, 70 to see them. And that to me now, it's become a reasonable price, unfortunately. But... yeah, they're out there. Like Mark Smith says, he saw Carl Palmer at the William Patterson University for $40. And he's an Emerson, Lake, and Palmer fan, you know? So he's like, and he had a great time. He's old fashioned. I don't think he's the guy that wants to pay that money either.
Yeah. You know?
I think even if you can afford it, it's fucking matter of principle.
At some point you just, you know, and I know that we've talked about this quite a bit over the past couple of weeks, but you wonder if that we get to a point where people just start saying no. Like I'll tell you the one that I'm a little bit concerned about, and it's going to break my heart. You know, they're talking about U2 potentially going on tour in 2023. Not only are they talking about potentially going on tour in 2023, but maybe even without Larry Mullen Jr. because he needs surgery. He can't play the drums the way that he normally would without a significant amount of pain. So I think they're playing
hands?
With the idea.
Is it hands?
Yeah, hands? I think so. I think so. But I mean, I've seen every U2 tour since 1983.
Yeah.
Always love seeing them. But if all of a sudden they're, you know, ticket prices are $500, $700, $1,200 or whatnot. It's going to break my heart to say, you know what? Sorry, I'm out. Yeah. I'm out.
I won't do it. Like, I would love to see Anita Baker again. I'd want to see Anita. Well, I don't know. I'd like to see Janet, but I'm not going to pay that much money. I'm not that big of a fan. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing special, I don't think. They're special enough to pay that much money. And that would be, so it'd be for me and Dr. Vera, it'd be fucking $700. And we're up here, like sitting up. And you know as well as I do, we're at the point where we don't want to sit up there anymore.
Nope.
I'll pay a little extra to be down low. I did my time up there.
Yeah.
You know? I did my time.
We all,
fucking 80 yards from the stage.
Yeah, we all have. You know, there are a lot of shows. If I don't have a good seat, I don't go.
Not worth it to me. No, I'm with you.
Not worth it. But I mean, you know, look, you're talking about $350 a ticket, and you're just looking at the base ticket. Or did you actually go through the whole process?
I jumped section to section. I jumped section because you could tap on.
But you're not even factoring in potentially all of the fees that are on top of that.
No, you're right. I didn't.
Yep. So Mark Smith says it right. He says, all we can do is talk with our wallets and hope each other's do the same. Otherwise, prices will continue to rise. And you're right, Mark. You know, the issue for guys like, you know, Scott and I know, you know, for me, you know, on average, we probably go to a dozen shows a year. You know, but there are people out there that, you know, the Anita Baker show or the Janet Jackson show will be the only show that they'll go to. And they'll actually justify, you know, the price saying, well, you know, it's the only show that we're going to.
You know who I would pay $350 to see? Wu-Tang, bitches! Oh, that's it! I'd pay $350 to see the Wu-Tang! Wu-Tang, bitches! I was waiting to say that.
Cheapest creepers.
Wu-Tang, bitches! I would see that. I would love to see them. I would love to see that.
Thank you for doing that. That was fine podcasting. That was fine radioing there. It's right
a visual.
There.
I know. I'm on an audio platform and I'm doing a visual bit.
You're really getting the hang of this podcast thing.
I have a Wu-Tang Christmas shirt on, right? If you want to see it, go to my Facebook page. You'll see it. I posted it. Like I post everything in my life. So the ticket prices again. And then, let me see. More Ticketmaster news. Let's jump into some news, right?
All right. I love the news.
Yeah. Let's get into some. So more Ticketmaster fucking fiascos. According to Ticketmaster, an unprecedented number of fake tickets were scanned at an event. Let me see. Who was it? At Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny fucking made a killing this year.
Bad Bunny is, for a lot of the music publications, like the artist of the year.
I think he might have had the tour of the year. He made a fucking killing. But
he played Fenway. Fenway.
Yeah.
It was like 40,000 seats or something crazy like that.
Yeah. So according to Ticketmaster, an unprecedented number of fake tickets were scanned at this Bad Bunny event that caused the systems to become overwhelmed, which led to hundreds of actual ticket holders being told, your ticket's counterfeit. Right? Angry fans who were denied entry began trying to climb stadium fences and had to be detained by security. Ticketmaster says it will be offering refunds to those who purchased legitimate tickets. I think this was in Mexico. So fans paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to attend the concerts were turned away, you know, combined hundreds of thousands of dollars combined.
Sure.
So Ticketmaster is now they're in the, they have to be on the lookout for counterfeit tickets. So, you know, have you ever encountered a counterfeit ticket? Like you personally?
I've certainly heard of it. I think I've seen it. I have not had one myself.
So when I was stationed in Southern California, one of the only concerts I really went to was Depeche Mode, right? I said, of course, because that's one of the bands I've seen multiple times. So myself and like five other people that I was stationed with, you know, we're all cops on base. We all go out to this amphitheater. I know. Amputee theater.
Amputheater.
Amputheater. And so we're going to buy, we had to buy, I guess, like three scalp tickets because two of us had tickets and the other three didn't, right? Go ahead.
Nothing?
No, you were going to say something.
Yeah, it was just thinking about your scalping at the amputheater.
So anyways,
and trying to cut costs,
and we go to at the amputee theater, right? So we get to the ticket, and then the guy scans. He goes, "Fake, fake, fake," like motherfucker, right? So we tracked the key, we tracked them down, and there was like three of them, and one of the people with us was a girl, so she really wasn't going to get into a fight, and one of the other guys wasn't really a fighter, so it was kind of I started kind of, you know, starting chilling, give the fucking money back. They're like blah 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 blah. So one dude, he takes off this, he has this fucking like leather studded belt, one of those thick ones, like a biker belt type thing, right? Like a Rob Halford, like belt, Judas Priest belt. And he takes it off, and like he's holding it. So I kind of circle around behind him, and I rip it out of his hand, and I gash his hand, right? So I took it, and I kind of whacked him with it, with the belt, right? And the cops come over, and all hell breaks loose. And in the end, those dudes got arrested. And they told us, here's some tickets. Go in. Because they had, I guess, confiscated some tickets from scalpers. These were real. Yeah, so I haven't counted counterfeit tickets. Yeah, and they paid. They paid dearly.
That was a fine story. Thank you.
Yeah. Violence. Violence is the way to handle those situations.
You're always finding yourself in the center of that type of controversy.
There's no other way to handle that situation. You're not going to talk reasonably to a scalper.
No, I'm surprised.
Your money already.
I'm surprised that the guy didn't realize, knowing that you know, you guys are probably an intimidating looking bunch, and didn't just say, "Hey, sorry, misunderstanding. Let me just give you money back."
They weren't giving the money back. That was They're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
So
I don't know what you're talking about.
You got your money back, and you got free tickets, and got to go in.
And I got to whip a human being. Yeah.
And you got to whip a human being. So I'm so glad that you've evolved. You know, on one side, you know, Scott, you're the guy that puts up, what was the number? 100 little Santas all over your house?
110.
You know. We're in your holiday shirt, listening to your holiday music like a little kid. And you still relish in the fact that you inflicted physical violence on somebody.
Exactly.
35 years ago.
Yes.
And still giggling about it like it happened fucking yesterday.
They had it coming.
Dude, they had it coming to them.
That's the bottom line. That's how I write it. They had it coming. Listen, you're going to rip people off. Don't stick around. Rule number one to ripping people off. Don't stick around.
No, so you know, younger kids that maybe, like the many, many thousands of young people that are listening to our fine podcast, I don't recall counterfeit tickets when I was younger. What I do recall were counterfeit concert T-shirts.
Or counterfeit hits of acid. I'll tell you that story in a minute.
counterfeit concert T-shirts. Do you remember that when we were younger? There was always a group of people that was selling T-shirts. There was a glitter on them. do you remember?
Yeah. The black ones, right? The baseball shirts, right?
So they were either, you know, black, just the cheapest, you know, you would put them in the wash and they would come out, you know, just from washing once, like most of the ink and all the glitter would come off. Your mother would be pissed because there'd be fucking glitter all over the washing machine or the dryer, right? And their shirt, after washing it once, it'd be all fucking deformed and you couldn't really wear it. You know, half of it was up here. The other part of it was down there.
Yeah.
You know, Van Halen, after one washing, they'd all look like they looked like the Planet of the Apes. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Let me see. Bill Aldridge said, I'm a juxtaposition. He is a juxtaposition, isn't he? I am. Yes,
yeah.
And
walking contradiction.
And Mark, but I'm good to have on your side. That's one thing we do know. I'm good to have on your side.
This is true.
Mark Smith said, tees that faded after two washes. Great parking lot buys.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, did you ever steal a t-shirt? You ever steal a t-shirt?
No.
You would.
No. Like,
You were not daring. You were a pretty safe kid. I will say that.
Scott, not for nothing. I was a couple of times going to concerts and you went out and stole t-shirts and I was like, no. I just want to go in.
Why are you getting us in potential trouble? Yeah.
I just want to see Styx or Foreigner or whoever the fuck we were seeing at that time. I didn't want any trouble. I wanted to drink my 16-ounce, you know, tall boy Budweiser and you know, have my hot dog with mustard on it. And just watch Jukebox Hero without somebody
getting punched coming in over the my face.
Shoulder. Yeah, asking for their fucking t-shirts back.
Hey, Suzanne McPhail says, I love your sweater. I got it. Wu-Tang, baby. Wu-Tang. Yeah. Wu-Tang, baby. Sorry. Let me see. Hey, did you ever notice?
Yes.
You know, look, we haven't we gone over this? The dramatic pause. What do you call it? The
negative space. You know the negative pause. Negative I forget space, exactly right? What I called
it. That was negative space. Negative space. The negative space. Right. So
no, you have to use it effectively.
I don't.
Like that shirt, that sweater that you're wearing, Scott, tonight. It's fantastic. Okay. You see that? Okay. You see that?
I got you. Hey, did you ever notice
the like our friends, you know, Suzanne McPhail? Unbelievable.
She is. So I love hot. Suzanne. So, I love so Suzanne. Hot. I love Suzanne. Do you ever notice the similarity between Smells Like Teen Spirit and More Than a Feeling by Boston? You ever notice the difference or the similarity?
Yeah, you're talking about the dun 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 dun
dun dun. Dun. Let me see. I'm gonna try to. I don't have it. Let me see. Let's go through this.
Lost health plan.
Let me skip the ad. Come on. I will never pay for YouTubes. All right, hold on. Listen.
Did all seem to change with that song?
Which song do you mean?
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, that song. Mm. Yeah, how about that? More Than a Feeling with the lyrics changed.
This is Nirvana doing that, by the way. Hold on. Now listen, stop. Jack, stop.
I'm not doing anything.
You're strumming.
Shut up.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the same fucking beat.
It's pretty close. Industry experts, it's pretty close.
Well, a lot of industry experts will say, all right, I can get rid of that now. They say that's basically what happened there. And you know the drum kick in that Dave Grohl, sure. you know where he got that from?
The Pixies?
No. He got it from, let's see. It is, da-da-da-da. The Gap Band. You get that from the Gap Band.
You dropped a bomb on me?
I think it's this one. Hold on. That's potty train. Did you hear it? No, because you were strumming.
But it took so long to get there. Like, you're killing me.
Well, you have the patience of a 5-year-old.
God, I want a hot dog with ketchup on it.
I bet you're the guy that stands in front of a freaking microwave and like 47 seconds is too long. You can't even wait till a minute. You have to stop it and check it.
Yeah, so? Yeah,
he even said that's where he got that beat from the Gap Band.
Yeah, you know, all artists leverage their influences. They beg, borrow, and steal. I mean, you know, look, there are a lot of people that proclaim that Nirvana basically ripped off the Pixies kind of formula.
Well, we talked about that. He's that was his Black Francis. That's his favorite group. That was Kurt Cobain's favorite group. And kind of has that same nasally sound. But, you know, hey, listen, Nirvana also, they found their niche, right?
Sure they did.
Their niche. So Metallica is in the news again. Metallica warns fans of wild and crazy crypto scams ahead of forthcoming album and world tour. Now, this article is something very interesting that I never really, I didn't know this, right? It says, Metallica just recently took to social media to appraise diehard supporters of the apparent flood of crypto scams centering on 72 seasons. About 1 week ago, the more than 4-decade-old act revealed its 11th studio album. So they've been together for 40 years and only did 11 albums. Think of that. They only did 11 albums in 40 years.
There are some people that think that there are 4 or 5 albums too many from Metallica. Metallica is a legendary band and they have some legendary songs, but in terms of the quality of their repertoire, their discography, you know, their history, their library, whatever you want to call it, they were really an inconsistent band.
Listen,
great, some really great highs, some really low lows.
I you know, if you take a step back and look and say they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? And because they made their mark, but they made their mark maybe with 3 albums, really.
They're
maybe 4 out of the 11 that are like superior albums, right?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum on this show. You know, I mean, most bands or artists, they have that creative arc, and they get to a point where they're not creating legendary albums anymore. They have some good songs that they put out. But I mean, you know, seriously, I mean, you think about it, when was the last really great Metallica album? It's been years.
Decades, maybe.
Decades. Some people would actually say that they peaked with the Black Album and they've not put out anything great since then.
But to be together 40 years and only do 11 albums, and they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is their albums, when they sell. It just seems to, like, there's, I don't know. I don't know, man. I'm not saying they don't belong there, but the work, 11 albums in 40 years, is kind of lazy.
They like to space things out.
Well, they did.
But in all fairness to Metallica, you know, they've made their legacy, you know, being a live band. I mean, you know, the cool thing about Metallica is they will put out an album, but then they'll tour on it for like 2.5-3 years.
Yeah. I'm not taking anything away from them. I just found that to be an odd statistic. You know, 40 years, 11 albums. You would think 40 years they'd have 15 albums, 16, right? Maybe that balances it off a little more. One every 2 or 3 years, 3 or maybe, but this is like every 4 or 5 years, 4 years. So it's
there are just some bands that do that.
Yeah, so it says about a week ago, the more than four decade old act revealed its 11th studio album, which is scheduled to debut in mid-April of 2023, as well as a single and a 2023-2024 concert series where they will charge upwards of $2,000 a ticket. Meanwhile, FTX officially filed for bankruptcy on Friday, November 11th. And besides rather predictably causing massive issues for other crypto players and investors, the multi-billion dollar entity's collapse is likewise impacting the music industry. FTX Ventures, the exchange's venture capital arm, was a key player in the non-fungible token space pre-bankruptcy. Those NFTs, try to figure that shit out. Anyways.
No, thank you.
Of course, more than a few music NFTs have rolled out since 2020's start, and FTX had invested in UMG's Bored Ape Yacht Club, and it issued the tokens for its NFT offerings of Tomorrowland and Coachella, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, in the wake of Metallica put out this statement. In the wake of last week's exciting news of our new song, new album, and new tour, unfortunately, the ugly side of social media made an appearance, penned the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductor group. Many of you have let us know about YouTube channels and live streams, as well as websites claiming to offer Metallica crypto giveaways in conjunction with last week's announcement. Let's be as clear as possible. These are scams. They're being streamed on fake YouTube channels posing to be ours and all pointing to websites that we do not run. Please remember, all of our official social media channels are verified. Always look for official verification before believing something wild and crazy to be true. We thank all of you who have been vigilant and reporting these live streams and YouTube to us. Please don't give up. So, but the casual Metallica fan isn't going to know the difference, right? No. But I do give Metallica credit. They are on top. They were the ones that were on top of Napster. They do protect their brand. I believe Lars Ulrich is the one that really heads that up. They really protect, like the Rolling Stones really protect the Rolling Stones brand, right?
Yep.
So Metallica's in there for something good, not expensive ticket prices. Let me see.
So while you were going through that, you know, just out of pure curiosity, you know, we were talking about the discography of Metallica and how they've only put out 11 albums in 40 years.
Yeah.
How long has U2 been around?
Since what? Really? Since 79?
They put out Boy in 1980.
Yeah.
You're talking 42 years.
But they had U2 3 before Boy, right? That was their like mini LP.
Yeah, but
I'm talking about
full releases.
Okay.
I mean, U2 got together in like 70, 75.
Yeah, 75. You know,
somewhere in there. But I think they've only put out like 13.
Right.
You know, not counting compilations or live albums or anything like that. I mean, but you know, studio albums. There's 3, 5, 8, 11, 12. I count 13.
13 in 40 years.
13 in 40 years. The Beatles put out how many albums in, what, 9, 10?
Right? I don't know, man. The Beatles
put out as many albums, studio albums, U2, it's taken them 42 years. The Beatles did it in less than a decade.
Right.
Different time, different place. You know, back in the days, you know, when the record companies ruled the roost, they were like, come on, let's go. Two releases a year.
We've been down that. Like Alice Cooper did two releases in a year. A whole bunch of those 70s bands.
The cool thing about that model is that they were kind of forced to keep at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, you know, like the early days of the Stones, the early days of Alice Cooper, the early days of the Beatles. They were producing because they were working at their craft all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I think you get these bands today, they're like, we'll just say they're like professional athletes are today. So I was just having this discussion over the weekend with somebody that back in the day, football teams did not like each other. The Jets and the Patriots did not like each other. Like, they never shook hands after the game. These guys were making maybe $20,000, $30,000 a year, right? They weren't making a lot of money. All of a sudden, like we'll say Alice Cooper Band or Grand Funk or some of the, you know, these 70s bands that were middle of the road to popular, they weren't making that much money. And then you get all of a sudden these athletes in the 80s and 90s and beyond that are making millions. So then it becomes a millionaires club. Now they're shaking hands after the game. They're taking care of each other. No one's trying to take anyone's head off. You know, Bill Lambert isn't trying to break Larry Bird's nose going down the lane. You know, they play hard. And it's like that with rock bands, I think, and musicians in general. They become worth so much money that it's like, I don't really have to do that. You can't make me do that. I'll sign my record contract for 5 records, but I'm not signing for anything more than that. You know, or 3 records, and I'm not signing anything more than that. Whereas back in the day, it was like, you got a 7 album deal. We want 7 albums. You know?
Yeah. In today's time, especially, you know, for people that are, you know, our age, and I can make reference to the fact that, so today I read an article that Pearl Jam, one of my favorites, is they're making really great progress on their new album. How many people outside of the diehard Pearl Jam fans, how many of them really care anymore?
A new generation has come along, and
they want to
Izzo and, you know, all that shit. Cardi B, like,
yeah, even folks like, you know, like you and I, who, you know, kind of came up with Pearl Jam. If we look at our contemporaries, most of them don't give a shit. They're not going to go and listen to the new Pearl Jam album. They want to listen to the first two.
We had that discussion. I believe you were putting that on me about Prince. Was it last week when you were saying, when did you stop listening to Prince? When we had that really weird, I don't know what you were trying to dig out of me conversation. You were trying to get something out of me. But you're right. No, but I got your point. Like, when did you stop listening to, like, our contemporaries stop listening to Prince, right? 2000s? Like, and I think we came to the conclusion that as we get older, our focus goes in a different direction. We have more to work on, more to look at, right? As we get older, our world is supposed to get broader. And this other,
we get lazy.
Or we get lazy, or you just take it for granted. How many bands have been taken for granted? Then you're like, and as we've said 100 times on this show, that's the beauty of music. You can go back and discover something, right, that you didn't know, which... So I posted a video recently. Now you got to go on. Got to go on YouTube and search for Laid Back Country Picker. Not the Waylon Jennings song, but you got to Laid Back Country Picker. That's the name of the dude's name. He calls himself Laid Back Country Picker. And he has this song called LB's Truth. I'm telling you, I sent you the clip, Jack, right? Clip of that song. This is some fucking unbelievably fucking crazy guitar playing. And he's got the old lady in the fucking housewife's dress and the curlers in her hair, honey, playing the drums. What a fucking unique concept. But that dude can wail on the guitar. And he does other stuff too. Laid Back Country Picker. So that's the thing about finding new music, right? You seek the fun. This stuff came out like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. The guy doesn't put his stuff on Spotify, doesn't put it on Apple. He won't put it on social media. It's like you can find his YouTube videos, but you're going to buy his album, buy his cassette, buy his CD, or buy his 8-track. That's basically how he does his thing. He like really keeps it real, really keeps it real. Perry Dinovich said, good point, 3 records, and I'm a free agent to sign with my choice. Yeah, I mean, that's what they do. That's what they do now. And that's why they can do 11 albums in 40 years. But, hey, listen, buddy, I know we're over the hour. We're coming up on hour 10. You got to go?
I can hang out a couple more minutes.
All right. Let me
I just had to grab a tissue. It's chilly up here.
I guess so.
It's chilly up here.
So let's see. Who inspired this song, or who is this song about? Now, we know, you know who Philadelphia Freedom is about, right?
Yes.
Okay. Billie Jean King, right?
Yes.
Martin
Luther Billie Jean King.
Yeah. We discussed before who A Day in the Life of, I did it on one of those Did You Knows. It was, do you know? A Day in the Life by the Beatles?
A day in the Life?
I brought it up once before. It's a pretty interesting. Yeah,
I don't recall. I mean, wasn't that, you know, John Lennon just pulling stuff out of the newspaper?
Well, it was John Lennon was the primary songwriter of the track. It was inspired by a car crash that claimed the life of his friend, a 21-year-old heir to the Guinness Empire, Tara That's right. Brown.
That's right.
Lennon yep. adapted the story in the Daily Mail newspaper. Adapted the story. Writers can't fucking write anymore. They don't know punch. Lennon adapted the story that was in the Daily Mail newspaper into the first two verses of the song, even the third verse, the enigmatic one about holes filling Albert Hall, was adapted from another article in the same edition of the same newspaper. The article was about the numerous holes in England's roads, and Lennon was inspired to make it a little more psychedelic. So, what is it? 10,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. Isn't that where they bury people standing up, north to south? Graveyard, mm-hmm. Blackburn, Lancashire. They bury people north to south. That's why they can fill Albert Hall. How many holes does it take to fill that one? So that's who that song is about. We know who Wonderful Tonight. Eric Clapton wrote all the songs about Patty Boyd.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Let me see. Oh, this one's kind of... Do you ever hear Chelsea Hotel No. 2 by Leonard Cohen? I've never... Not a big Leonard Cohen guy.
I know the song. Yeah.
So the 1974 Leonard Cohen album, New Skin for the Old Century, for the Old Ceremony, contains one of the most memorable of his songs, of his early songs, Chelsea Hotel No. 2. In it, he describes... In surprising detail, a one-night stand with a woman he would later reveal to be, oh, good Lord, he had to be drunk, Janis Joplin. Oof. Oof. Voted best looking, voted worst looking guy in her college.
By a fraternity. I know you're not a big Janis fan.
But, I mean, I don't have to be. She was not a looker, dude. It's just, she looked like the bottom of an old fucking glass of milk.
So, once again, we're allowed to comment because we're such beautiful men.
I'm better looking than Janis Joplin. I know that. So are you.
You guys kind of look the same.
Well, look, you put a big, but yeah, he wrote the song about her. Ooh. The Chelsea Hotel in New York has been a famous temporary residence for artists ever since Mark Twain had stayed there. Let me see. Who else do we got here? And then they show a picture of Janis. And dude is not fuck. I mean, God damn, she was ugly.
Oh, man.
I'm just saying.
Come
on. Let me see. Cohen used to love regaling his audience not only with the song, which is explicit enough, but with the story and the name behind it. He would tell the audience, I banged Janis Joplin. Well, you don't go. I wouldn't brag about that. I might put that one under the bed. I might put that one away.
Come on, she may not be, you know, have been good looking, but that is a notable conquest.
Okay, that I will give you. I will give you that. I guess it's a conquest.
But by the way, for each of them,
what wasn't she a lesbian though?
I don't know if she was.
I guess
a lesbian
not at that time. I think she was, but not at that time. Maybe she was bi.
Not that it matters.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. I mean, look at if I looked like her, I'd take any way I can get it. Also,
oh God, Jesus,
I'd take anybody.
God, we've come a long way from talking about holiday songs.
We definitely took a left turn somewhere. In Your Eyes, Rosanna Arquette. I've discussed that one in the past, and Toto's Rosanna, same thing. Imagine not having two big songs like that. She was kind of a, she definitely was a cute girl when she was younger.
Well, yeah, she was very attractive.
She, I mean, you have her, then you have Janis Joplin that's uglier than a bag of skunk assholes.
Jesus Christ. A bag of skunk assholes. Where'd you pull that one out of?
That's the image. That's the image I get when I think about her.
Yeah, but come on. You didn't come up with that. Where did you hear that?
I didn't. I'm serious.
Bag of skunk assholes.
Skunk's assholes, yeah. All right, your guy, Bob Dylan. Girl from the North Country. Right? He wrote about an early girlfriend. She was an actress and, of course, an activist. Bonnie Beecher. Jennifer Juniper by Dunham. There's a lot of this. I could probably. Lola. Right? You know the story behind Lola?
I do not.
Slightly creepy but undeniably infectious song Lola tells the story of an innocent young man's unexpected romance with a transvestite. You can't say that today. Transvestite is not a proper term.
Wait a minute. I know that story, but is it inspired by something specific?
But who is the man and who is the trans woman in real life? Well, that depends on whom you ask. Rolling Stone says that the woman was Candy Darling, a popular actress in Andy Warhol's circle of artists and one of the inspirations behind Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, and that she and Kinks frontman Ray Davies had dated. Davies claims that while he and Darling had gone to dinner a few times, he was never under any misapprehension as to her true identity. Davies claims that the song was inspired by his manager's drunken romance with a trans woman at a bar one night. They had danced the night away, with the manager never realizing that his partner was not the woman he thought she was. She had, as the song would later say, walked like a woman and talked like a man. There you go. Let me see. Let me give you a couple more, and then I'll let you go. Yeah. God Save the Queen. Well, we know who that's about.
Yes, we do.
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. It's a bit of a mystery to try to unravel how much of this song is a joke and how much represents Paul Simon's actual frustrations after his recent divorce from his first wife, Peggy Harper, and his new relationship with actress Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Simon and Fisher finally got, let me see, this comedic chronicle, how to sound. He got married in 83, but then got divorced after just a few years, starting to date again. I don't know. You know what? Doesn't matter. I'm not going to go through all these. There's some. Oh, here you go. This is the one I was wanting to get, and then I'll let. Then you can get out of here. Then you can go. Jersey Girl by Tom Waits.
Catherine Brennan.
Look at you.
It ended up being his wife.
Yeah. He was working on a movie soundtrack at the time, and would go see her when he could. She was
great song. Covered by who?
Bruce Springsteen.
Correct.
Yep. All right, buddy. I'm gonna let you go. Here's a picture of him and her. Yeah, she was kind of cute for him.
She was she turned his career around. You know, not only, I mean, there's somebody that, you know, she doesn't claim the spotlight, but she helps him with a lot of influences. You know, she is definitely his muse, helps him with a lot of the writing. They're a great, great, great couple.
Did you listen? Did you watch that interview I told you to watch with him?
I did.
With the Australian guy?
Yeah, it was a bit painful to watch, you know, just because, right? You know, Tom Waits is so awkward. And, you know, I'll tell you, the thing that threw me a little bit on that was where the interviewer was clearly an American, right? Not Australia.
Yeah, but he's well, there's a lot of American there's a lot of American bands that are big over in Europe, like the Andy Warhols. I mean, they're huge over in Europe, you know.
The Dandy Warhols.
Yeah. They did I say Andy Warhols?
You said the Andy Warhols. Yeah, which is fine. Warhols. That's good. It's all good.
Hey, listen, you keep it up, and I'll be singing We Used to Be Friends, okay?
Come on.
It's a great song. I do like that song. All right, buddy, listen, I'm going to kick into the top 10 This Day in Music.
Goodbye.
Next week with... Oh, that motherfucker. He got me. Every week now. It's like, who's? I should just cut him off. Next week, I'm just going to cut him off right before I even say anything. I'm just going to cut him off. He did it to me. Anyways, let's get into the top 10 this week, and I decided to go with 2012, right? 2012, this was 10 years ago. Oh, boy. Number 10 this week in 2012, Gangnam Style by PSY. Mark Smith's favorite part of the show, This Day of Music. Number 10, Gangnam Style. Do it Gangnam Style. Right? Number 9, Let Me Love You Until You Learn to Love Yourself, Neo. Number 8, I Cry by Flo Rida. Number 7 this week in 2012, Home by Philip Phillips. And I know a lot of you are going, who? What? I know. But I have to jump around. I have to kind of shake it up a little. I can't always do the 70s and the 80s. Let me see. Number 6 this week in 2012, Some Nights by Fun. Fun is actually the first concert that my stepkids, David and Amanda, went to see. Yeah, they saw him here in Boca. And then David moved on to going. I brought him to see. He went from Fun to Korn. Big fucking difference there. He likes Korn better. And I took him to see Gorillaz and Korn. Yeah, so yeah, he's definitely broadened his horizons in the music world. Number 5 this week in 2012, Hohei by the Lumineers. Number 4 this week in 2012, One More Night by Maroon 5. Number 3 this week in 2012, Die Young by Keisha. Number 2 this week in 2012, Locked Out of Heaven by the talented Bruno Mars. And number 1 this week in 2012, Diamonds by Rihanna. All right. Move on to This Day in Music. You know, I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to go from start in 1962. Bill Wyman made his live debut with the Rolling Stones at the Rikki Tikki Club. All right. The group were known as the Rolling Stones during that period. Not Rolling, the Rolling Stones. It was a good move getting rid of that costume, putting the G in there. This day in 1963, the Beatles played a show for their Southern Area Fan Club at Wimbledon Palace, London, whatever it is. To prevent damage to the stage from fans, the management at the Palais constructed a platform for the Beatles to perform on. Surrounded by a steel cage. Like, you just want to be at that show. Just to say, I saw the Beatles in a steel cage match. That's basically what it was. On this day in 1968, Marvin Gaye scored his first U.S. number one single with I Heard It Through the Grapevine. That's always the question. Who does the best version of that? You got Marvin Gaye, Gladys Knight and the Pips. You got Creedence Clearwater Revival. I think there's one other one in there that they're all fucking good, though. It's hard to say. On this day in 1969, the Jackson 5 made their first network television appearance in the U.S. when they appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. Didn't everybody get their start on that show, right? Mark Flynn says, I've won every steel cage match I have ever been in. Okay, buddy, because you never fought me. Uh-huh. Oh, the California Grapes. Mark Smith says, California Grapes do the best version of Heard It Through the Grapes. I knew there was somebody I was missing there. I knew it. I knew it. Good call, Mark Smith. Hey, by the way, Mark, you and Lou are on next week. I'm bringing you on for the... It's going to be like a Christmas end of year show because we're not going to do one after New Year's. I'm going to take that week off. So get that notebook ready, buddy, and get that sharp tongue because, you know, you got to put Jack in his place sometimes. So let Lou know you guys are going to be on with Jack next week. Because you deserve to be on the end of year show. You do. Because you saved me at least a half dozen times this year. Let me see. Mark Flynn says the Jackson 5. Yeah, Mark Smith. Yeah, you better buy your wine now. Bring a couple of bottles to that show, I think. But don't worry. Don't worry. Jack will leave after an hour. So we can really do our long format, which I like doing. See, you guys, Mark Smith and Luke Colicchio, when I brought them on, whether it was together, and they're from the Music Relish podcast, whether they were together or I had each one of them at different times on individually, minimum 2-hour shows. And I was used to doing just like an hour and 10 minutes. And we were like killing 2 hours. It was almost like I had to stop it because we could have kept going. But since then, I really, if you've noticed, if you're listening to the podcast or watch the live stream, that I really like the long format. You get more information out. There's no rush. You're not on a time constraint. So Mark Smith and Luke Colicchio got me into that because they do their podcast. They do. They definitely do long format. They have some good long shows, but they're always informative. I'll tell you that. Music Relish podcast. Go listen to them. And they up their game. My buddies, the Music Relish podcast, have upped their audio game. So they all sound what I would say normal now. Anyways, moving on. Let me see. What does Mark Flynn say? The Jackson 5 was so cool. They gave them their own cartoon. Yeah. Yeah. And they had, didn't the Jackson 5 cartoon, didn't have like a snake. Didn't they have like a pet snake or something they fucking put in there? Like it made really no sense. Like what the fuck are they doing? It's like a pet snake that was always into mischief or something. I don't know. Maybe I was drunk back then when I was 12. Let's see. This day in 1971, Led Zeppelin 4 was riding high in the top 10 of the U.S. album charts. In 2006, the album was rated number one on Classic Rock's magazine's 100 Greatest British Albums. Oh, okay. Let me see. And number one in a poll conducted by Guitar World. All right, cool. Let's see, what do I got? I missed my pinball machine is Led Zeppelin 3. I missed it by one album. On this day in 1972, Born to Boogie, the Ringo Starr-directed movie premiered in London. The film was based around a concert at Wembley Empire Pool, London, England, starring Ringo Starr, Mark Bolan, and T-Rex, and was released on the Beatles' Apple Films label. None of that Apple shit ever really made it. On this day in 1973, Bruce Springsteen appeared at the Pinecrest Country Club in Shelton, Connecticut. Only 200 tickets were sold. There you go. On this day in 1979, The Clash released their third studio album, London Calling. The double album received widespread acclaim. It was ranked at number 8 in the Rolling Stones list of the 500 greatest albums of all time in 2003. It was ranked as the 6th greatest album of the 70s by NME. Also, the original pressings, as I always say, have that hidden track, Train in Vain. It's not on the it's not on the track listing, but it's the last song that got thrown in. The whole story behind that, but I'm not going to talk about it now. But let me see. On this day in 1980, Yoko Ono called on fans to observe 10 minutes of silence in memory of John Lennon. 30,000 gathered outside St. George's Hall in Liverpool, while nearly 100,000 attend a memorial in New York's Central Park. On this day in 1985, Whitney Houston scored her first UK number one single with Saving All My Love for You. The song, which was written by Michael Masser and Jerry Goffin, had been a minor hit for Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. in 1978. That's right. That's right. I never connected those dots. It was also a U.S. number one for Whitney Houston. On this day in 1991, Michael Jackson started a 4-week run at number one on the U.S. album chart with his 8th studio album, Dangerous. The album sold over 32 million copies worldwide, making it one of the best-selling albums of all time. 9 singles were released from the album, spanning 2 years. Jesus. On this day in 1997, Canadian guitarist and songwriter Kurt Winter died of kidney failure at the age of 51. Who's Kurt Winter, you ask, right? He was a member of Brother and the, he was a member of Brother and the Guess Who. He replaced guitarist Randy Bachman in the Guess Who. Let me see. They scored a number one single, number 19, American Woman. Winter penned the hit singles Bus Rider, Hand Me Down. Okay, anyways. On this day in 1998, Billy Preston pleaded guilty to insurance fraud in a Los Angeles court and agreed to testify against six other defendants. Oh, he snitched. Billy Preston was a snitch who allegedly participated in starting fires, staging thefts, and rigging car crashes, for which a total of 18 fraudulent insurance claims were filed. Preston received 5 years of probation for being a snitch and 1 year in jail to run concurrently with the sentence he was already serving for violating probation on a prior conviction for cocaine possession. Still a snitch. Snitch is a snitch. On this day in 1999, Sir Paul McCartney appeared at the Cavern Club, Liverpool, England, in front of 300 people with David Gilmour, Deep Purple drummer Ian Paice, Pete Wingfield on keyboards, and the legendary Mick Green of Johnny Kidd and the Pirates on guitar. It marked McCartney's last gig of the year and the 20th century. His last gig at the venue was in 1963. The show went out as a live webcast and was estimated to have been watched by some 3 million people worldwide. On this day in 2003, Ozzy and Kelly Osbourne went to number one on the UK singles chart with Changes, a remake of a track first sung by Ozzy. Thousand fans and friends gathered at the Arlington Convention Center in Arlington to mourn the guitarist's death. And it goes in to say how he's doing. It was sad. On this day in 2015, Adele was at number one on both UK and US charts with her third album, 25. That was a massive commercial success. It debuted at number one in more than 25 markets. Excuse me. And it goes on to sell, I don't know, like in 20 million copies worldwide or something. Yeah. And on this day in 2019, Rod Stewart became the oldest male solo artist to have a number one album in the UK. When the singer's 10th chart topper, You're In My Heart, went to the top of the charts. Sir Rod, who was 74 years and 11 months old, took the accolade, which was previously held by American singer Paul Simon. Rod Stewart just came out and said that his now wife, I forget her name, is the first wife he's ever been with that went through menopause. Said it. Yeah. Like, he's been with all these women. It's like, oh, you're going to menopause. You got to go. Menopause? Oh, you got to go. I got to get somebody younger. You got to go. See ya. But evidently, when he's like 82 now, he's going to stick with the woman who's going through menopause. Well, not sure. I don't know. I could get it. Anyways. All right, let's get to birthdays. We're almost done here. Born on this day in 1932, Charlie Rich, singer and musician. In the latter part of his life, Rich, who acquired the nickname the Silver Fox, is best remembered for his 1973 hits, Is When We Get Behind Closed Doors. How do I know that? You know why? Because, and Hey, Have You Happened to See the Most Beautiful Girl in the World? Yeah, I know Charlie Rich. I'm a 70s kid. Yeah. Rich died in his sleep on July 25th, 1995 at age 62. Young. Born on this day in 1946. Joyce Vincent Wilson, singer, and I could probably pause right here and say, you do not, I don't even think, you know, all right, okay. So Mark Smith, Luke Colicchio, and Perry Dedovich, they between the three of them, and Jack and I, we all probably know a lot more than we suppose should know about music. I think we'd all agree with that. But if I asked any of them who Joyce Vincent Wilson is, they would not know. They would say, I don't know. But when I say, born on this day in 1946, Joyce Vincent Wilson, singer from the American pop music group Dawn, right? Tony Orlando and Dawn, who were popular in the 70s. Their signature hits included Candida. Oh, Candida. We can make it together. I had the 45. Knock three times. I had the 45. And tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. I had the 45. God damn it. Yeah. So happy birthday to one half of Dawn. Born on this day in 1949. Okay, fuck it. Let me start this again. Jesus Christ. Born on this day in 1949, Cliff Williams, bass player for Australian rock band. I'm letting you people who know say it. Cliff Williams is the bass player for Australian rock band AC/DC. He replaced Mark Evans in 1977. Happy birthday. Born on this day in 1958, Peter Spider Stacy, Tin Whistle, from the Irish-British Celtic punk band, The Pogues, who this time of year have one of the best Christmas songs, Fairy Tale of New York, that they now edit. Fuckers, they can't leave anything alone. Song gets fucking edited. This generation sucks, don't they? This fucking younger generation sucks. You're listening to my podcast. You're part of that generation, and you don't agree that, well, a good chunk of your generation sucks. Well, listen to another podcast. I don't care. But I like you. If you're listening, I like you. Anyways. Yeah. All right. Happy birthday, Peter Spider Stacy. Plays the tin whistle for the Pogues. Scored a 1987 UK number 8 single, The Irish Rover. And there you go. And the 1987 UK number 2 single with Kirsty MacColl, Fairy Tale of New York. Great Christmas song. And finally, dun, 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 born on this day in 1958, Mike Scott. You guys didn't know who Mike Scott is? Maybe. I know you music people. Mike Scott, 80s band. Pretty big song. Hole of the Moon. Yeah, Mike Scott, singer-songwriter for The Waterboys, who had the 1991 UK number 3 single, Hole of the Moon, was first released in 1985. That album, This Is the Sea, by The Waterboys, is most definitely in my top 5 favorite albums. This Is the Sea by The Waterboys is a fucking great album. I think the guys from Music Relish should do a segment on that. They do like an album. You know, it's just, one of them has an album to talk about every week, every episode. Go listen to This Is the Sea if you haven't already. It's a great fucking album. Start to finish. As I say, a perfect album. Every song is good. And with that said, my friends, my listeners, my viewers, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. I appreciate your time. You are the engine that runs this machine. Without you, it would be me talking to myself. Well, I am, because Jack left. Nothing new there. But next week, at this point in the show, Jack will be gone. And I'll be with Mark Smith and Luke Colicchio of the Music Relish Podcast. Yeah, they'll stick around. But I bet you Jack sticks around. I bet he does. FOMO. Fear of missing out. I don't know. Maybe not. Anyways, and like I always say, doing this show for you, to quote my favorite artist, Morrissey, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. I will be back next week on this podcast for our Christmas show, and then we're taking the New Year's off, taking that week off. So it's basically the end of year show next Wednesday. And podcast listeners, you'll hear it next Thursday. All right, everybody. Talk to you soon. See you later. Whatever. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Say Merry Christmas to people. Just fucking say it. Okay? Whether they want to hear it or not, you should be saying Merry Christmas. That's what I say. Merry Christmas.